Today's episode of Pulse Check is presented by Pfizer Rx Pathways. Get the help you need to get the Pfizer prescriptions you need. Find your path at PfizerRxPathways.com.
Farmers, self-employed people who don't get insurance from the government, or they don't get it on the job, and they're getting priced out of the market because premiums are skyrocketing. My purpose is to bring those premiums down in the year 2018, and to do that, we've got to take action.
I'm Dan Diamond. This is Pulse Check, and that was Senator Lamar Alexander talking about the future of the Affordable Care Act marketplaces and how he wants them to be fixed. We're less than 1 month away from the start of Obamacare's open enrollment, but there's still a lot that's up in the air. How much the government wants to fund these marketplaces, how much the administration wants to see them succeed, and even who's going to be overseeing the marketplaces at HHS. With so many questions swirling about the future of the ACA, I wanted to go outside the Beltway and bring you a conversation with someone who's making decisions about whether to be in the marketplace in the first place. And today, that conversation is with Bernard Tyson. He's head of Kaiser Permanente, one of the biggest insurers in the country, and someone who sees a lot of potential in the Affordable Care Act marketplace. You'll hear that conversation in a moment, but first a reminder, you can rate, review, subscribe to Pulse Check on your favorite podcast app. Please share it with a friend. Share your feedback with me. I'm at ddiamond at politico.com. And we'd love to hear your suggestions about who you'd like to hear from next. And with that, here's Bernard Tyson. You were in town in mid-September to testify in front of the Senate about their bipartisan plan to potentially fix the Obamacare markets. Now, in the span of 2 weeks, that plan was abandoned. The Graham-Cassidy repeal plan surged. The repeal plan is now dead. As we sit here and talk, what is your feeling, your emotion about the whirlwind that has surrounded the Affordable Care Act? Is it relief, frustration, something else?
No, it's probably more of being practical that healthcare is a very emotional issue, and there are different points of views about where we should go in the future. And we live in a great country where all of that is subject to debate. And so I think you described it very well. What I'm hopeful for now is that we go back to a bipartisan solution. I was very encouraged by that work. I think that we have a chance with both sides coming up with some practical fixes that allows the Affordable Care Act to move forward. We may continue to debate whether or not we should continue with the Affordable Care Act and or to repeal and replace. But I want to be clear, what I'm concerned about are the millions of people today who are covered on the Affordable Care Act, 1.5 million, for example, that are in Kaiser Permanente. And I want to give them some relief that we have some certainty about the future until we decide to do something else, if we decide to do something else.
When you testified in front of the Senate, you said you were optimistic that everyone will get covered in America, covered with health insurance. Are you more optimistic than you were a year ago when President Obama was in charge and it looked like Hillary Clinton would win the presidency?
I am optimistic within myself because I think it's needed and so right for us as a country that fact of the matter is anyone today can get health care. But if you don't have the coverage, you don't have access to the front door of the American healthcare system.
And what you mean is everyone can get emergency care
emergency
under the EMTALA law. You walk into an emergency room, they care for you, but you might not be able to get that long-term chronic preventive care.
It's episodic, it's in the moment. It's based on a dire need, which means that people suffered longer than they should have suffered. It also means that it's probably going to be more expensive because more than likely it was something that could have been caught earlier if they had access to the front door of the American healthcare system. So in my view, in the long term, as we rethink and reinvent how we provide care in this country, I think the economics starts to change, and there's no question that there's already evidence that would demonstrate that.
You've talked about the plans for Kaiser and how you're going to change, and I want to get there, but first, thinking about who's leading that change, at least politically, President Donald Trump has spoken out about the Affordable Care Act. He's taken a lot of shots at it. He's also spoken out about other things he wants to do in healthcare. And right before we sat down, the president said he's going to sign an executive order allowing health insurance to be sold across state lines. Wasn't more specific than that, but do you have any immediate reaction to that idea from the president?
Not really, because obviously that was just spoken about before I walked in. Now, that
15
said...
15 minutes ago, yeah.
Yeah, that said, Kaiser Permanente, we provide Kaiser Permanente care and coverage in 8 states in the District of Columbia. So figuring out what that might mean and then how we would respond to that is probably work that we would have to look at as we go forward. I think the real focus, though, now is how do we deal with the here and now? And there are some things that could be done, and I'm hopeful that this bipartisan group will get back together and come up with some solutions per recommendations that were given to them in a consistent bipartisan way that will help to stabilize the Affordable Care Act.
And right under my left hand, I have your recommendations, your testimony to that committee. What do you think is the most important fix? Is it the payment for the cost-sharing reductions, yeah, the CSRs? That's
the CSR is fundamental, and it needs to be solved very quickly, and hopefully that's being prioritized. I also think, as I said in the set of recommendations, some consideration to the reinsurance issue, which allows us to deal with the risk sharing across all of the different health plans and insurance companies. And then I think the third area is the issue of state flexibility, but with and attached to national guidelines or guardrails that protects the interests of the consumer.
My test is always, if our producer, Bridget, doesn't know the acronym that we're using, some listeners might not either. So just to clarify, the CSR funding, those are the Obamacare payments to health insurers, essentially, who are caring for customers who might be more expensive, and it's kind of subsidizing insurers to stay in the market. Is that a fair way of talking about it?
The way to think about it is it's really for the patient to access care. So when you think about the Affordable Care Act and insurance overall, I always look at two things, especially as it pertains to affordability. Do I have access to coverage, and therefore do I have access to care? So given how insurance companies write different premiums, you may end up with buying an affordable insurance, which means I have access to coverage. But the deductibles and the fees and the copays could make it so expensive that you find yourself not feeling that you can have access to care because so much money is coming out of your pocket. So with the premium subsidy that the government provides through the ACA, that goes towards your premium payment. Some people cannot afford to, if you will, pay the deductibles, and so the CSR helps to fund those deductibles. So it gives you access to coverage and access to care.
Not only are you we're looking at the producer who's nodding.
I'm looking at the producer,
yes,
also.
It passed the Bridget test, not as well known as the Kimmel test, but known in our office and on our team. So thinking about the difference in having that guaranteed, insurance companies have walked away from this market. They say that there's too much uncertainty. You're participating, but you have told the Senate, you've said this before, with guarantees, insurance companies will come back. Do you know that? Are there specific ones that you could point to that have left that will return to the market?
Well, to clarify, with the guarantees and the fixes in some of the vital few areas that I also mentioned.
So not just CSRs,
right,
but also
the resolution of the reinsurance and the dealing with the state flexibility being the biggest three. Yes, I have examples of individuals that I've talked to that they said they would be willing and probably will become more aggressive in getting back in the markets that they have left. So the ones that I've talked to did not get out of all of the markets. Joe Swedish, Anthem, is not out of all of the markets. Mark Bertolini and Aetna is not out of all of the markets. And so I'm optimistic that if we solve to some of these issues, these individuals and others got into the market and became more aggressive in the market when the Affordable Care Act was passed. The reason why that is important, I would argue that the government's role is not to solve the healthcare industry's problem and challenge. The government's role is to figure out what the appropriate funding would be from the government and the rules of engagement by the industry, and let us compete against each other on a level playing field.
And I've heard this from lots of healthcare executives that some of the frustration with the repeal efforts isn't as much people love the Affordable Care Act, it's the rules of the road changed. Insurers, hospitals, others have learned to work in those new rules, and now there's an attempt to maybe change the rules dramatically again, and that just makes it hard from your perspective.
Not only that, we invested in the Affordable Care Act, and so Kaiser Permanente, as a totally integrated system, invested. Aetna invested. Anthem invested. We hired people. We built new infrastructure. We design our organization to compete for this new opportunity. This was a win for everyone. And so we all went in with the competitive spirit that we're going to bring a value proposition to this population funded by the government. And not necessarily that the rules change, but the uncertainty with the execution and the commitments being carried out caused most of this instability that ultimately led to many saying, that's it. I've had enough. It's too uncertain. We're not following what we all agreed to. My plea is let's fix those few things and let the market behave like a market. And then you start to get into competing on price, competing on affordability, competing on service, and competing on quality. Why do I know that's possible? I would take California as an example. We compete on all those terms, and the benefit is happening to millions of people who are benefiting from this kind of an environment, and that's what I want to create.
Talking about the folks who are covered through the Affordable Care Act, and you cover loads of them. In California alone, I think a third of the enrollees through Covered California are through KP. Are you turning a profit or at least breaking even on these enrollees? You are. You're nodding your head. What do you do that has allowed you to do that versus some of the insurance companies that have participated and said, we can't serve this market. We're losing money on our patients.
Well, I think a couple of things. First and foremost, historically, you know, and I've heard this argument, this is not a market where you get in it because you're going to make a big profit. And obviously for Kaiser Permanente, that's not our attention anyway. So we're not in it to make a lot of money.
No, you are a profitable organization, to be clear.
We have to make a return to invest back into the fact that we're a comprehensive system. So we have to continue to build hospitals and medical office buildings. And we have over 200,000 employees. And so we have to take care of retirement benefits. And in our Permanente medical groups, we have 23,000 physicians that we want to make sure every day that when they come into Kaiser Permanente, they have everything that they need to carry out the care for millions of people. That's it. What really is the focus is how do you create the value proposition? And so what we've seen in Kaiser Permanente, now granted, we're a totally integrated system where we have the care and the coverage, and we manage our patients through our Permanente Medical Group physicians like we do everyone else. And once you build that relationship of trust, you start to focus on prevention, early detection, early diagnoses, early treatments, you create a different paradigm in the care of those individuals versus just waiting until something goes wrong and then you end up with just a fix me system.
So it's a philosophy issue. It's an also integrated delivery system, what you're able to do that some of these others can't. And I was at the advisory board for years and would hear from CEOs who would say, we want to be like Kaiser and try and fail. Is it possible for other organizations to replicate what you do today? Or is it just a historical quirk that you were able to do this in a different environment to set up that philosophy? And it's hard in 2017 to make the shift and do it now.
I think it's possible in terms of many aspects of what we do as Kaiser Permanente that I've seen other organizations around the country replicate. I think what is different is the magic, for example, of our Permanente Medical Group physicians. Nobody can replicate our physicians. I would argue that.
Are they doing magic tricks? Like, is there...
No, it's the DNA. It's the having the self-governed model within the Permanente Medical Group. It's the fact that I never interfere with the medical practice, that they decide what is in the best interest of the 12 million, almost 12 million patients that they take care of on behalf of the relationship that they have with the health plan. It's the fact that we can resource with the hospitals, with the staff, with the medical equipment, with the technology that gives them a platform to do all of this. And it's the fact that they work together as a comprehensive multi-specialty group practice where they share information. They've created an environment of being the best at getting better. And so they're always looking at how to improve. And they look at it with data and best practices and guidelines. They have a spirit of cooperation, and so they're not competing against each other in terms of hiding all of that amongst themselves. They're constantly working to get better. And that takes a certain chemistry for that to work. And then we sit together at the same table, and we work through complicated issues of healthcare, how to make sure we have the right coverage for the right care, how to make sure that we're incenting the right behavior, how to make sure we're debating the right issues so we can, as a comprehensive mega system, produce the right value for the communities and for the members that we serve.
Today's episode of Pulse Check is presented by Pfizer Rx Pathways. If you're underinsured or uninsured, getting affordable Pfizer medicines can be a daunting road. Find a simpler path at PfizerRxPathways.com.
You talked earlier about the rules of the road and the investments that Kaiser Permanente has made in the new rules of value-based care. Is this administration slowing down the transition to value-based care with some of the moves recently to cancel bundled payment programs and another uncertainty, or has it been a non-factor for you?
For Kaiser Permanente, with the different model that we have, which is based on a capitation model, it's not affecting us to that degree. However, with that said, there is a reality that it has created some speed bumps with the progress that's been made under the Affordable Care Act. But I also see the momentum that is happening in other areas in which I don't think that this will slow that down, because we still have millions of people who are getting care and coverage from other sources like employers and other programs. And so they are still looking at and asking questions about the right way to finance and to evaluate how effective care is being provided. So I think that will continue.
One more question on the Medicaid, the CMMI, Medicare's Innovation Center. There have been questions about where that agency is going, that sub part of CMS. Do you think it should continue on the same path that it was under the Obama administration? Should they revise the direction? CMS has openly talked about changes that they might want to make under the Trump administration.
I think it can evolve, but I think that the whole intent was to create an environment where you nurture innovation. And I think that that is needed as we are in a very different space today with where healthcare has evolved from when the Medicaid bill was passed in 1965. So the idea behind it is to really figure out where in an environment you can innovate and look at different ways to improve upon affordability, quality, and service. That should continue.
And they're requesting information now for the direction of CMMI. Is that something that Kaiser Permanente is going to weigh in on? Are you going to send suggestions for where you think it should go?
We're willing to help in any way that we can.
One more question about HHS and CMS. So we have a pair of leaders, Tom Price, who's been in the news recently, partly for Politico reporting about his travel. Then we have Seema Verma, who runs CMS, and is someone who didn't really know the Medicare side before she stepped into her role. She was a Medicaid consultant. Have you had dealings with either one of them? And if so, how have you found them?
I've had the opportunity to meet with each of them when they first went into office. And clearly, we are aligned that our interest is to make sure that the American people are getting high-quality care, and that is the most affordable. And they both were very open to ideas and thoughts, and they were early, obviously, in their position. And I believe that they have the same interests at heart. How do we take care of the American people? And they had open doors. And so I'm on the side of I work towards solutions. And so if we all agree that we're after the same outcomes, we can debate about the best ways to get there. I think the challenge is how to make sure we don't move to a standstill. The whole point is to continue to move forward towards our common goals. And that's the work that we have in front of us. And it has to happen in a bipartisan way.
Price and Verma both backed Obamacare repeal efforts. In your mind, is that moving the system forward or is it moving it backwards?
Well, I believe that with the fixes, that the Affordable Care Act can meet the objectives that we all agree on. There may be different views. The reality is that the latest effort, they decided not to proceed towards a vote. I think now we need to put our attention back on let's try with the suggestions that were made by a cross-section of people around some things that we can do to fix what is and to stabilize the market.
So if I was trying to pin you down, I would hear a lot of optimism that things could be better moving forward, but you're not necessarily endorsing Price and Verma for backing Obamacare repeal.
Well, I don't want to get into a political framework about how I want to address these issues. What is on my mind are millions of people who are looking to people like me and them and others to solve these problems so they can get health care when they need it, so they can raise their families, so they can go to their churches, so they can contribute to society. That's where my energy is. Let's fix the problem. And I don't want to get caught in a political debate around it. I'm more practical with I'm here to be on the side of let's solve something so we can make life better for others.
So you are Switzerland in the political battles around healthcare. Let's talk a little bit about your path, which is one reason I wanted to talk to you today. You started out 30 plus years ago, I think, as an entry level analyst.
Yeah, that's right.
And now you are CEO of one of the most important companies in healthcare, arguably one of the most important companies in America. Is that path replicable today? Has the economy changed in a way that to go from being an entry-level analyst to CEO of Kaiser Permanente, we can't do that in 2017 the way that you could if you were starting in 1982?
Oh, I think it's possible today. I think it's even more possible. I think it's going to continue to be a challenge, but and one would argue it might be more of an exception to the rule, but I think it's possible. I think what is also possible today is that there are many individuals who, because of technology and because of the advancement of knowledge, they're able to start their companies, and they're able to start from day one in roles like mine and build things. And So, I mean, it's more challenging. That's probably very true. But I don't think the idea of the America dream, if this is one of the dreams that someone has, is absolutely impossible.
So the reason I'm asking is there was a fascinating article in the New York Times recently about custodial staff, a janitor at a company today like Apple and then a company 30 years ago. I think it was Kodak. I might be wrong. But how 30 years ago there were more training programs, and there was more of that social contract between the employee and the organization. And today, there are a lot more freelancers, people who might stay at an organization for only a couple of years, or the benefits might not be as comprehensive, and there's less expectation from a company and also from the employee that there will be a 20 or 30 year relationship, so there's kind of less mutual investment. If I'm hearing you correctly, you think that other changes in the economy have made it more possible to rise from entry-level person to titan of industry. But when you look at income inequality and mobility across the country, do you have any concerns that maybe there are these other bigger barriers that have emerged too?
Well, I think it's important that one not mistake that I'm in the role I'm in today from the beginning of, 34 years ago, my entry position as coming in as an administrative resident, finishing up a residency program, is because I earned it from how I continued to develop myself and be developed and to go through different experiences, et cetera. I think those opportunities are still here today. It may not be in one company. Certainly, I could have taken different paths as well. But the idea that all doors are now closed and you simply have to hope that somebody opens those doors, et cetera, yes, there are challenges, but I think there are still these types of opportunities that are out there. All I was building on was in addition to that, you now have situations where someone can build their own company because it's a different kind of infrastructure now that's available, namely technology, that allows people to connect to a value proposition that others will be willing to purchase. So we still have challenges. I would argue that we still don't have a complete level playing field. There are still conflicting rules of the engagement and rules of the role that we have today. But there's also progress that we have made, and I believe we will continue to have progress as we go forward.
Thinking about your organization and how you are leading it moving forward and what you're looking at, I've heard you speak about the future of care is not in the hospital. It's at the home. How much investment has Kaiser Permanente made in that future post-hospital marketplace?
Quite a bit. Not, probably as we continue to learn more about what can be handled in the home, we'll get better at that. We do believe that the idea that everyone has to come in for all of their health care, we're demonstrating that that is not the only way to get and access health care in the 21st century. So we have invested a lot in our infrastructure using technology. As I've been calling it, is both high-tech and high-touch. It's not intended to replace the touch. When someone needs to be touched by a physician or a nurse or someone in the health system, that is still front and center. But there is so much that we can do, and we, in fact, do with through our Permanente Medical Group physicians and our medical teams to provide care that is out through the information that you get when you need it.
Kaiser Permanente has had successful financial performance the past number of years. You talked about reinvesting in the system, but just to put some numbers around it, your operating income last year was $1.9 billion. Your net income was $3.1 billion. You're a not-for-profit organization. You're tax-exempt. How do you make sure that you are earning that tax exemption and that money is being funneled not just to staff and education, but to the communities around your facilities?
Yeah, That's a great question. The operating net income is about 3 cents on a dollar, all right? That goes back into our community benefit programs. And so we fund everything from subsidized care to we still do free care when needed. We have community initiatives that we do around the country. We have to do a community health assessment in every market that we're in. Last year, I believe our community benefit spend was something like $2.8 billion. So that's a major part of what we do, both from the mission of the organization and our obligation to the federal and state government, because we are a 501c3 tax exempt organization. In addition to that, the income is used for the investment back into the medical practice, back into the infrastructure, and back into programs that supports over 200,000 employees.
Community benefit is such a big umbrella term, though. There are things like helping people with free cancer screening. That's community benefit. There's the charity care for folks who come in and can't pay. But then community benefit sometimes can entail sponsoring a local half marathon or even hosting a lecture in a campus building. Should all of those things be treated the same as community benefit, or is there a real difference between, as you were saying earlier, the touch, helping a patient get care, versus some of the nice things like a lecture or sponsoring a marathon that might not have immediate healthcare ramifications?
Well, it's both of those things. In our model, it is as important to us that we pay attention to the health infrastructure in our communities as we do, quote, medical care. And so absolutely community benefit should be applicable to a farmer's market if we have deemed that as being necessary in a community because they're not getting the right fruits and vegetables and other healthy foods. And so we are directly contributing to health and the health and well-being of those individuals with taking a responsible role in making sure that healthy foods are in that particular community. The same would be true if we are helping to sponsor something that is about a lecture that helps someone to figure out how to maintain health or how to live a healthy life. I think all of that falls into the framework of health and health care. It's a very good question because the foundation here is, what is the health system of the future? Is it a wellness-based system in which you try to figure out how to maximize the healthy life years of an individual? And that lends itself to prevention, early detection, early diagnoses, early treatment. Or do we continue with a fix-me system, which is we wait until something goes wrong, and then we apply all the resources to try to restore the person? And obviously, it's not as black and white that it's either or. It's a combination. In the 21st century, we need to figure out how we extend the investment upstream to prevention, while at the same time having the right infrastructure that deals with when someone needs to be restored. That's part of the recalculation I believe we must do in this country as we think about health care for the 21st century.
I have so many more questions, but your time is valuable, so I think I only get to ask one more, which is this. When thinking about where your organization is going and who is competing against you in this space, who is the competitor that keeps you up at night, to use an old advisory board term? Is it another health system? Is it Amazon? Is it Apple? Is it some other organization that might not be playing as big a role in healthcare as they could potentially play?
I sleep at night. That's number one. Number two.
You do seem more well-rested of the two of us. Yeah. Very well put together today. Yeah.
And I think number two is I don't think about my competition from that standpoint. And obviously we are a unique model because we provide the coverage and the care. What I pay attention to is which ones of my competitors are truly innovating and what can we learn from them? And which ones of the competitors are stuck and what can we learn from them?
Who's innovating and who's stuck?
I would not end this interview giving out names.
It's just you and me talking, and Bridget's over there. It's just a casual conversation between a few people.
I have learned a lot from my competitors.
Well, we'll have to end on that cryptic note. Bernard Tyson, head of Kaiser Permanente, glad you could make the time to join us today.
Thank you.
That's it for Pulse Check today. My thanks to Bernard Tyson and the team at Kaiser Permanente for making the conversation happen, and our producers, Bridget Mulcahy and Beatrice Peterson, for pitching in. You can find Pulse Check on all of your favorite podcast apps. You can find me at ddiamond at politico.com, and you can find a new episode of Pulse Check in your podcast player next week.